Hello everyone, this is Boots on the Ground podcast and I'm your host D-Blex Lesalone. In this second episode of our new series Ocean Month podcast, I am so delighted to have this chat with Carolina Hezin. Carolina is a Brazilian biologist with postgraduate studies in ecology, public policy and international relations. She is the Global Marine Policy Coordinator at BirdLife International based in the UK. Her work is focused on multilateral environmental agreements, including the UN Biodiversity Beyond National Jurisdiction Treaty, Regional Seas Conventions, and the Convention on Biological Diversity. She has more than 20 years' experience in marine conservation, protected areas, and wetlands policy, both at the national and international levels. Carolina worked for the Brazilian Ministry of Environment for over a decade, where she was the national focal point for the Ramsar Convention and advisor for protected areas, also involved in implementation of the World Heritage Convention and UNESCO in the country. Before moving to the UK, she worked for UNESCO National Office in Brazil with a focus on marine conservation and spatial planning. I hope you enjoy this episode and learn something. Karibu, karibu sana. Lina, thank you so much for joining us straight from Brazil. And could you kindly take some time and introduce yourself?
Hello, D-Blex. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and thanks for the invitation. So I am Carolina. I'm a biologist by my background, and I am the Global Marine Policy Coordinator at BirdLife International. Based in the UK. Actually, I'm in Brazil now during the COVID time, working remotely. But my passion for policy made me also get into the studies of public policy, international relations. And now I am dived into the marine world by advocating for marine conservation with BirdLife International.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that, Carolina. Could you give us a brief background of BirdLife International and its conservation work?
Yeah, sure. So BirdLife is a global partnership of national conservation organizations committed to nature conservation. And our aim is by protecting birds and their habitats, we are looking after the environment as a whole. We have this quite unique way of work from global to local and local to global. We are our partnership is present in over 100 countries, our partners worldwide. That is, we have one partner per country or territory. And our conservation efforts and also policy advocacy is based on our rigorous science. Yes. And BirdLife is actually recognized as a world leader in bird conservation. And I think another thing that I would like to share is that we are also responsible for elaborating the red list on threatened birds. So we are an authority to develop this list of threatened birds worldwide. That's us.
Fantastic. As we celebrate Ocean Month, we will be covering about high seas and why they are important and the type of threats they are facing. Could you walk us through why high seas are important?
Yes, definitely. There's so much to say there, D-Blex. So when I'm asked that question, the first thing I like to say is that every second breath that you take comes from the ocean. I think that may not be known by many, but it's quite important. I think when we think of oceans, we don't think that is so important in terms of oxygen and climate regulation. So the oceans absorbs nearly 40% of the carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and releases approximately 50% of the oxygen to the atmosphere. So it's quite important natural system that we really depend on. And this is, of course, why we need to have a healthy ocean. It's so important to us all. I think important to maybe define what the high seas are as well.
Sure.
Before
sure,
we
sure.
start diving into the discussions.
Yes, please take it on.
Good. So the actually the high seas, what we call the high seas, is an artificial divide because, of course, that we know that all ecosystems are together, right? They are connected, better putting. So from the shorelines of a coastal country up to 200 nautical miles, we call it exclusive economic zone, where the coastal state has jurisdictions and the right to explore natural resources. From that 200 nautical miles onward, this is what we call the high seas. So this is a political divide. And the high seas is actually an area that is, we consider international waters, right? So it all countries together are responsible to manage it, and everyone is can be benefited from this area, which occupies 46% of the planet Earth. Actually, it's massive. And I think that's another importance of the high seas, is it occupies almost half of the planet Earth, which is Earth, but it should be planet ocean if we consider the size of the ocean. Yes. So, yes, I've mentioned the importance of the high seas for climate regulation and for the oxygen provision. But another thing that it's quite remarkable is that many species spend, animal species, they spend more than half of their lives in the high seas. They come to the coast, they migrate, but they frequent the high seas in of their life cycles, from seabirds, whales, turtles, sharks, and the very fish that some species of fish that we consume. So it's an area that houses many biodiversity, which are very important for the health functioning of the ocean and the earth as a whole. I think that is it. I mean, Yeah.
And as you've mentioned, it doesn't, like, it's a collective, effort from all governments to protect the high seas. How does that look like, Carolina?
Exactly. So it's what we call the global common, the high seas. So it is, I think the way I describe the governance structure of the high seas is the following. Imagine a country with different ministries, but without a head of state. So you have the Ministry of Transportation, the Ministry of Culture, Sports, Environment, Energy, Food Security, etc. But you don't have a prime minister or president or whatever system do you have. So it's without a head of state. And this is pretty much like the how the high seas are governed. There are a number of treaties, international organizations, frameworks, bodies, etc., that has mandate on specific activities. So there is the Intergovernmental Oceanographic Commission under UNESCO, which is responsible for scientific research in the oceans, including the high seas. There is the maritime organizations under the UN regulating shipping and dumping, etc. There is the International Seabed Authority regulating seabed mining in the high seas. There is a number of organizations, the regional fisheries management organizations regulating fisheries activities in the high seas, but actually they are independent bodies that don't have as I said, like a head of state or similar to head of state. There is not a global organization that puts them together and coordinate their work. So this is quite challenging in terms of the managing ONA space, right?
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Let's switch on gears now and talk about some of the biggest threats facing these high seas. You've mentioned some of the benefits these high seas are to the Earth, you know, to planet Earth. Like 50% of oxygen on Earth directly comes from the ocean, and the ocean supports a massive biodiversity and life on Earth. You know, Carolina, what are some of the biggest threats facing these high seas?
There are many DBLEX, and although the heights is quite far away, it's kind of a limited accessibility. There are so many threats now imposed in the high seas, and I can mention some unsustainable fishing practices, shipping with the related dumping and pollution, climate change, and land-based pollution. So the ocean today receives massive amount of plastics and other types of pollutants coming from land. And seabed mining is an emerging threat as well. So there are already areas being explored for future exploitation of metals. But fishing is quite an important one, and I think it's one of the major threats to the high seas. Of course, there is not the fishing itself, but the way that is being practiced, and lots of illegal fishing. It's what we call IUU, illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing taking place in the high seas, and it's estimated that 20% of the total catches comes from IUU fishing. Some unsustainable practices impacting biodiversity, other biodiversity, and also some social issues related to fishing activities as well. It's quite expensive to fish in the high seas. It's not a cost-effective activity. So these activities mostly subsidized by countries to allow for, you know, cost, fuel, and workforce. But because it's so expensive, what happens is that there is we see slavery and really harmful practices taking place in fishing in the high seas. It's quite serious, actually. And dumping, it's also very serious. Dumping of garbage, pollution, chemicals of all sorts.
Yeah.
So, yes, lots of things going on there, but it's so far away that I think that we don't realize that it's an area so much impacted.
Okay. And can oil spills be considered a threat? I recently saw on television a ship that has sunk in Sri Lanka, you know, exploded in flames and massive oil spills there. Could you consider this a threat?
Absolutely. Oil spills, it's a massive, massive threat. And I've seen the case in Sri Lanka. And apart from the oil, I've seen that it also dropped some plastic pellets. So it's a tremendous impact because that is consumed by the fauna. And of course, it enters the food chain. These bad consequences, harmful consequences to the environment, definitely.
Okay. And according to you, Carolina, how does the global ocean governance landscape look like at the moment?
Yes, as I was mentioning, the high seas is like a country's government with ministries without a head of state. So it's very challenging because there are various organizations regulating different activities in the high seas. So without coordination, you can imagine that it's quite challenging in what regards to biodiversity conservation, because activities are taking place, but without being having the main objective or looking at some harmful consequences or impacts that they may have over biodiversity. So what we call it's kind of a patchwork of organizations.
Yeah.
And in fact, due to that. Complexity, that challenges, the United Nations, and also for the lack of an organization responsible for biodiversity conservation and sustainable use, the United Nations have decided in 2018 to start the negotiations of a new treaty for the high seas, for biodiversity conservation and sustainable use in the high seas. So it looks promising in that respect. This negotiation has been challenging, of course. You can imagine almost 200 countries negotiating a new treaty. With their own particularities, these countries with their own particularities, socioeconomic circumstances, context, etc., negotiating an area that has lots of interest, that these countries have lots of interest on. So it's been challenging, running very slow, I would say.
Yeah.
But I want to leave a word of hope and say, yes, that's something very positive that is happening at the moment for ocean governance.
Sure. We will keep an eye on that to see what comes out of these deliberations. And as we move along, Carolina, could you tell us about some of the attempts made in advancing our ocean governance, and what does it look like on the ground in these, you know, negotiating, whether it's negotiating treaties, bringing all stakeholders on board? What are some of the attempts, you know, being made to advance and ensure that ocean governance has been taken seriously, really?
Yes, absolutely. The negotiation of this treaty was decided a couple of years back, and in fact, the fourth round of negotiations happened last year, but due to the COVID pandemic, it has been postponed. But actually, the discussions around this treaty has started back. So it is a topic that is recognized as important, but due to the challenges and the difficulties in getting it has been
and just recently has been negotiated as a treaty that regulates conservation, biodiversity
conservation activities in the high seas. Of course, there's lots of stake there. And the efforts to improve over ocean governance are coming from various sources and organizations. Countries are investing in improving this conversation, I would say, this talk about the ocean health. But there are NGOs as well engaged in improving and working alongside with countries to improve this in ocean governance, strengthen the capacity of countries to engage in their discussions. And I'd like to mention one of these efforts, which is the very project that I'm part of. The BirdLife, of course, is part of the Strong High Seas project. It is financed by the German Climate Fund, and coordinated by the Institute of Advanced Sustainability Studies, IASS, and BirdLife is a partner of this project in the African continent, in Western Africa. And what we are looking at is precisely to work with countries to engage them more in the discussions and provide the studies, reports that can inform the countries and other stakeholders in the region to engage more effectively in the discussions, and therefore, and also, I think it's important to say, to interact with other sectors. So it's not just focusing on environment sectors, on board the fisheries, the mining, oil and gas, and all the other sectors to get to a common understanding, define a common goal, and see how we can better achieve a common goal and healthier ocean.
Fantastic. And I'm sure, sorry, carry on.
No, and there are actually various other organizations and initiatives. The Convention on Biological Diversity is also working through this with the Korean government on this initiative that is called the Sustainable Ocean Initiative, and hosting various dialogues between the regional seas organizations and the regional fisheries organizations, again, trying to understand to map the common interests, where are the challenges, the opportunities to work together. There are various initiatives of that sort, really to improve what we see today, which is really fragmented and is not being effective for that purpose.
But as you said earlier, there is hope, right?
I think that there is hope. I think we need to have hope. Otherwise, we just close the door and go sleeping, which I don't think that's what we want, right?
Sure, we don't want that to happen. The UN began negotiations on a treaty on the conservation and sustainable use of marine biodiversity beyond national jurisdiction. Sorry, how are these negotiations progressing, Carolina?
Is low, as I was mentioning. As I said, there are different stakes on the table. There are, of course, valuable resources in the high seas, and countries are fearing that a new treaty that regulates the conservation and sustainable use of biodiversity will somehow limit that use of resources freely. But I think that what we need to bear in mind is that it's not doing harm to the ocean that you have benefits, and the economic benefits will be short term, but the long term or medium term even benefits for humanity by exploring or exploiting resources in an unsustainable manner, in a harmful manner, this is not profitable at all. So it's something that is really not cost effective. And despite the challenges of the that we face and the various stakes, I think that we need to be hopeful and we need to adopt this treaty as soon as possible. It's urgent. It's an urgent matter that the countries need to commit and finalize these negotiations. Hopefully early next year, if we are positive, we have some agreement on the text. It's a large text. It covers marine protected areas, environment impact assessment, the benefits and sharing of benefits from exploration of marine genetic resources, capacity building, technology transfer. So you can imagine that it's not an easy subject to address. But I'm hopeful really that we, as a community, as a conservation community, comes to an agreement by next year.
Sure, I totally agree with you on that one, Carolina. And as we look to close this session, and as we celebrate World Ocean Month, what key message would you like to pass along to our listeners?
There is one saying that I like. It's like out of sight, out of mind. And the high seas, I think, applies to the high seas because it's so far away and we don't think much about it. And we don't know the threats that are taking place, and we also don't know the value that it has to us all. But this doesn't really apply, although this is a saying that we think that makes sense, it doesn't, because disturbing, damaging the biodiversity in the high seas will be felt by everyone. So we need to look after the high seas. And I think that every individual would have a role to play or contribution, which is asking for your representatives in the government to take a positive decisions to have these agreements adopted and implemented when it's adopted. So have actions in place to provide a healthy ocean. I think that's my last words.
Okay, Carolina. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. What a brilliant conversation you've had.
Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for coming to the show.
Thank you very much, Diblex. It was my pleasure. And thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye.